head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline as we get to say hello to our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle as he joins us now. John, how are you?
John and Jimmy, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing quite well. And it seems as though that there's plenty to discuss in regards to Deshaun Watson. And it seems that we are revisiting more and more in terms of the potential for a move if and when everything settles down. But once again, we hear that the Broncos could be a preferred destination for one Deshaun Watson. And what do you think it would take for that to fall in place, to take place?
The Broncos were one of eight teams that showed interest in Watson before he started having his legal issues, 22 civil lawsuits that still have not been resolved. There's an NFL investigation, police investigation in Houston. And so they were one of the teams that was very interested. They did not have multiple picks to include in a trade, and I'm sure they would have tried to trade Drew Lock in a deal, which means the Texans would have still needed to find a starting quarterback. And so the Broncos, like those other teams, all pulled back when the legal issues began, and nobody has made any offers under the current situation, and they're not expected to. When he gets those legal issues resolved, they're not just going to run out and trade him to the first team. They're going to see how many teams are still interested and make the best offer. Kareem Jackson, his former teammate here with the Broncos, said today that he talks to Watson and Watson wants to come to Denver. I'm sure Watson's told several teams he'd like to be there because the Broncos are not a playoff team. And if I were Watson, I'd want to go somewhere to be a playoff team. But he has a no-trade clause, but I'll guarantee you when they want to trade him, he's not going to exercise it because then they can say, well, you can continue to stay out and not get paid, or you can accept this trade and get paid $10.5 million this year and $35 million next year. So nobody has any idea where he's going. I just know the Broncos were a team that was really interested, and the addition of Teddy Bridgewater to compete with Drew Lock is not going to curtail their interest. Problem with Denver, they don't have multiple number one picks, and other teams that are interested do.
As far as the Texans, they actually saved Deshaun Watson about $93,000 in fines as they've canceled their mini camp. Were you surprised to see that move? And is that a reflection of the coach and the staff being pleased with what they've done in the OTAs to get to this point?
Now, I wrote a column today that if they followed the lead of Indianapolis and Indianapolis and I think it's Philadelphia, the two teams that had announced they weren't going to have mini camps, then Watson would avoid that time. And it's three different numbers each day, totaling, I think, $93,080. And so he'll save that money, and he probably needs it, considering how much he's paying in attorney's fees for Rusty Harden, one of the most expensive attorneys in the country. So David Culley, the new coach, said, about halfway through the off-season program, when they were getting ready to have the second and third phases, he met with a bunch of veterans, kind of an unofficial leadership council, and he told them that it was more important to have great attendance at the off-season program. And remember, the union was recommending players not attend the off-season program, to have great attendance for the off-season program, and if they did, and if they got the work accomplished he wanted to get accomplished, they wouldn't have their mini camps. So Culley kept telling us every week about how great the attendance was. Either some veteran players that didn't want to participate in practice, I don't blame them, as odd as hell, but they were out there with their position groups and went to the in-person meetings. So he canceled it. Players were happy. Media was happy. Everybody's happy. The next time they're on the field together, well, they won't be on the field. They'll report for training camp on July 27th, and that would be for physicals and start of conditioning. But it's a nice little vacation. It's a good reward for players because other teams are having the mini camps.
John, Ryan Tannehill, Titans quarterback, has agreed to restructure his deal to make cap room for Julio Jones. Number one, your thoughts on Tannehill making that move, and number two, Does Julio Jones vault the Titans into a discussion of being a Super Bowl contender?
A discussion, yes. I think they were a Super Bowl contender anyway. Remember, Atlanta was able to have a Super Bowl season with him, and he made one of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history. Nobody remembers because of a catch Julian Edelman made in the remarkable comeback by the Patriots here in Houston. But Jones should feel like he died and went to heaven, not anything against Atlanta, but the Falcons are not very good and don't figure to be very good with the Titans. If you think about Julio Jones opposite A.J. Brown, two big, strong receivers, with Derrick Henry, the league's leading rusher and running back, and Ryan Tannehill has played great in his two seasons there, they, to me, are number two behind Kansas City as a Super Bowl contender. Now, I picked them to win the division before this because of their threesome. Now it's a foursome, and I think it was a great move for the Titans when you consider Tannehill's 33. And if they keep running Derrick Henry like they do, he's not going to have enough, very many more years to absorb that kind of punishment. And then, of course, A.J. Brown, in another year, he's going to have to get paid. And it's hard to pay two wide receivers big money. If Julio Jones plays well this year, and they do well, he's going to want his contract redone. So you're not going to be able to do both of those wideouts, pay them what they want. But thing is, Tannehill didn't take a pay cut. He just took a restructure and got some money up front. So that's a great deal for him because he may be the luckiest quarterback in the NFL considering the guys he's got around him.
Yeah, that scenery now is so much better than Miami for him, what it was when he was there. So Green Bay, it just looks like Aaron Rodgers is not going to play. Do you think they'll have any wide receivers this year?
No, yeah. You know all those players will come back. It's so funny. James Jones, who played with Rodgers, he's in the media. He said, I talk to him all the time. He'll be there. Mark Tauscher, former teammate, is in the media, said, yeah, he'll be there. It's interesting. The former players who know him and played with him think he'll be there this season. Media people who cover him think he will not be there. And so I don't know who to believe, but I trust more the players who know him. Although if I talk to him all the time like James Jones, I don't think I'd be telling the media all the time that he's going to be there. Because if Rodgers wanted that known, I'm pretty sure he would let people know. But I've never thought he was going to miss out on $44 million, which is he would lose base salary, his prorated signing bonus, a workout bonus, and I don't care how much money you got. That's a hard number to walk away from.
John, it is such a difficulty. It's been a while since we've seen a Super Bowl champion repeat. And Tom Brady, as he met the media, was talking about how the Bucs can avoid the quote-unquote Super Bowl hangover. What do you think the biggest challenges are? And is Tampa any further down the road to repeating because they have the unprecedented position of having retained every starter from last year, which you almost never see when a team wins a Super Bowl?
I thought every time the Patriots won the Super Bowl, they'd repeat, but only once did they. And that's when early in Brady's career when they won back-to-back. One of the reasons it's so hard, it's not the players who lose. It's almost a mental thing where you're just not as sharp. And remember, they were a wild-card team. Mm-hmm. New Orleans won the division, and I know it'll pain Jimmy to hear this, but he knows it. The Buccaneers are going to be favored. And people are so skeptical about the Saints quarterback situation when they pick them to like be a wild card. It's going to be because of their faith in Sean Payton and the organization that they have. But they could be on another one of those spirals in which they finish with a losing record 3 years in a row, like they did a few years ago, until they get that settled. But I'm not going to pick them. If you said the Bucs are the field, I'm taking the field just because of the odds. Brady will be 44. I don't know how long it'll be, but at some point he's going to show his age. But they do have talent. They love playing for Bruce Arians. Unlike Green Bay, they called him and told him they were going to take Kyle Trask at the end of the second round, and they've brought players in that he wants. He's the envy of people like Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, but they've only won one Super Bowl. Brady's won, what, six? So he's going to get that kind of respect. But they'll be fun to watch, that's for sure. But I'm not picking them. I don't know who I am picking them. I may pick the Titans, may pick the Chiefs. There's going to be a lot of people pick the Chiefs every year. And who knows, the last 2 years, the Packers have reached the NFC Championship game and lost. And another thing about Aaron Rodgers, when he did that going-away interview with Kenny Mayne on ESPN, he talked about how much he loved his teammates, the coaches and the fans, and everybody says he loves football. So do you walk away from a great situation because you don't like a general manager, because he cut a couple of your buddies? That's what football is. People complained about Ted Thompson wouldn't sign free agents, and when Brian Gutekunst got promoted, he started signing free agents, and Rodgers had thrown 26 and 25 touchdowns in back-to-back seasons. So people were starting to say, well, he's getting into the line. And the Packers drafted Jordan Love. And then Rodgers came back and threw a career-high 48 last season. And I don't know if it's because of Love or what, but he did. And I just can't see him not playing. I just don't see it. It's not like he's got a bad team. It's not like the coaches are in conflict with him all the time. He's got a perfect situation for the Green Bay Packers, and he never has to talk to the general manager. I wonder, when his agent went to Green Bay and tried to work out an extension before the draft, and if he'd have gotten that extension, would he still hate the GM?
Fair question. Very fair question.
Hey, John, because of the return of Dak Prescott, I've seen a number of people pick Dallas to win the East. Are you on that bandwagon?
I am, Jimmy, because I picked them last year. If you remember, in 2019, they won and they beat Seattle at home. And last year, you know, they had a lot of injuries, not just with Prescott. So they brought in Dan Quinn as their defensive coordinator. And before he went to Atlanta as the head coach and took the Falcons to a Super Bowl, he was a top defensive coordinator at Seattle. Now, he had better players with the Seahawks than the Cowboys have on defense. But the Cowboys are loaded at the skill positions. Their offensive line that they invested so heavily in, they can't stay healthy. If they could stay relatively healthy, they can have a prolific offense, and I believe they will. Washington won the division 7-9. They got Ryan Fitzpatrick and Kyle Allen and Taylor Heineke and at quarterback, and so they don't have a really good quarterback. People, we like, there's kind of a mythology about T because he's been around so long, and he has Fitzmagic for a few games, and then he goes down the toilet. Philadelphia's relying on Jalen Hurts, 1-3 as a rookie starter, and the Giants have Daniel Jones in his third year, make or break for him, but the Cowboys have the best offense. Washington has the best defense, and I'm going with the Cowboys because of better skill position players.
Ezekiel Elliott did not have a very good last year, and I wonder, was that because of a banged-up offensive line? Was it because he didn't have Prescott at quarterback, or was it because maybe he's lost a step?
I think it's all of the above. That kind of sounds like a cop-out, but their offensive line was bad and because of injuries. And then with Andy Dalton playing, you know, people loaded up for the run, as they should have. And now, with Prescott back throwing the ball down the field, they're going to be much more prolific as a passing game, and that should open a lot up for Elliott.
John, as long as you've been around and covering sports of all kinds, have you ever seen an athlete as uncomfortable as Garrett Cole was the other day when asked about whether or not he'd put a sticky substance on a baseball?
You know, he had 3 days to prepare for that. And I've heard people praise him because he didn't lie and say no. But he was like a deer in the headlights. And he's been in pressure situations since he was the first pick in a draft by Pittsburgh. And I just, I kind of felt for him. I have a high opinion of him because he's a great pitcher. Plus, he gave the Astros two really good seasons. But, man, you talk about awkward and uncomfortable. That was him. And I can't wait to see. He's pitching tonight. He's under a lot of pressure. And then Trevor Bauer, who's the most outspoken player in baseball about other teams, you know, they're talking. And I'm wondering why baseball is waiting now to crack down on this instead of done it in the off season or wait till the next off season. Probably, you know, baseball has become, it's almost a home run or a strikeout. Everybody's about the uppercut. Everybody's about exit velocity and launch angle. And you don't see as many fundamentals as you used to, you know. And if a pitcher goes seven innings, they're ready to pop the champagne corks. The game's a lot too long, even though they've tried to speed it up. But you never want the pitching to dominate too much, because it's like the old Braves commercial, chicks dig the long ball. And so I think probably baseball sees what's happening. And remember, or I can't remember if it was spring training early in the season, Bauer came up and they started collecting baseballs. And I'm wondering, if they're pitching with a sticky substance, why don't the umpires know this? Why don't home plate number no umpire know this? All he's got to do is pick up the ball and feel around on it.
That's true. That's very true. I've seen a couple of stories that break down the quarterback battles that are going on around the league. You, of course, have one that's going on with the franchise that you cover, with Deshaun Watson not being in terms of known what his availability will be this fall. How do you see it in terms of the work that's being done, and how does that meeting room shake out about now?
Well, Watson will never take another snap here. And so Tyrod Taylor is the starter. And the backups are Jeff Driscoll, a six-year veteran, and Davis Mills, third-round pick from Stanford. And today in practice, they let Mills take some reps with the second team. They're all about rotation and competition, looking at different players in different positions with different groupings. And then when they go back and watch all this tape of the off-season program, it'll give them a better idea of what they want to do when training camp begins on July 7th. A team like the Texans, with 50 new players, including 42 veterans, they could use another preseason game. I thought I'd never say that because I hate preseason games. But I'm not sure how NFL teams are going to handle three preseason games, but because they have a bye week. They have 2 weeks before the first game. So if you play that third game and you don't play your starters significantly, they're going 3 weeks before that first game, and they may not be the sharpest.
John, you mentioned one of your columns that took that was posted today. What else are you working on this week?
I'm doing a column for tomorrow about David Culley eliminating the mini camp. And didn't do it because of Watson, but Watson's such big news here. It saved him the $93,000 and change. And we've got podcasts up there, TV show that we do 2 a week, and I'll have columns and blogs. I got a lot of things on Texas Sports Nation. John and Jimmy, thank you guys very much as always, and have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, you do John. The same, John. We always appreciate you. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle and TexasSportsNation.com joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Jimmy, we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline for a very special guest.
Absolutely. Really pleased to be joined by Danny White. He's Tennessee's athletic director, hired in January. Had a Zoom call with the media earlier today, but we're pleased to have him join us. Danny, how you doing?
Doing great. How y'all doing?
Fantastic. Really appreciate you joining us. I know you've had a ton of calls about Tony Vitello, and I wanted to ask you this. I know that there's some consideration about what you can do facility-wise, but do you have any indication yet about what your maximum capacity could be? Could you get to 6,000? Could you get to 8,000? Do you have any idea?
I don't. We haven't got into that specifics yet. And probably more than total capacity, our thinking is primarily the first thing I'm concerned about is what positions our program best from a recruiting and player development standpoint. I want to make sure that we're very competitive there, and we're thoughtful about where we do expand, obviously you have that left field run that's kind of unfinished, and that's really the only kind of blank canvas part of the stadium. So we do have some needs from a player development and recruiting standpoint. We got to make sure that they're incorporated in whatever we do. And from a fan experience perspective, creating more social premium areas is important. I know people love that atmosphere out on the porch where you can talk and socialize and watch a game. So those things are probably the two biggest priorities over capacity as we think about what makes sense. Obviously, you have big games like last weekend, this coming weekend, but we also have a lot of regular season games. And I think one of the things that makes Lindsey Nelson special is that it is kind of an intimate crowd that's right on top of the field, and we certainly don't want to lose that.
I just saw a statement from the SEC regarding name, image, and likeness, and it points out that Congress needs to pass a national solution for student-athlete NIL rights. Do you feel that's very important to make sure that all states and all the conferences are on the same page with the NIL?
I do. I think we all have to be consistent across the country. Competitive equity has always been a hallmark of college sports. It's really important even within our own conference. Obviously, we're all in different states. It's important for the student athletes, incoming recruits, and all of us associated with college sports. We need to be careful about how we manage name, image, and likeness. It's the right thing to do on behalf of the student athletes, but we also need to make sure that we protect the collegiate athletics model that's so special in our country.
Certainly appreciate your time, and it's good to talk with you again. I know it was a frustrating moment for some Tennessee baseball fans that weren't able to get tickets to the Super Regional. How many tickets do you wish you had available this morning when everybody tried to get in as best they could?
I wish I had a million. I could wish, but it doesn't amount to much. We prioritized what we thought was, and we do think is the right things to do. Season ticket holders, those people that made the decision to buy a pretty inexpensive season ticket at the beginning of the season and supported the team all year, they were a priority. Obviously, we have a visiting team allotment that we can't do anything about. And our students were a priority, and I'll stand by that decision. We need to make sure we get students in the building and reward them for the atmosphere they helped us build all season. It's just reality. It's a big game, and there's a finite amount of tickets. We are going to have standing room only tickets for sale the day of the game, and I think it's important for people to know we had great crowds last weekend. We never turned away one person at the gate. We let everybody in. We were able to get in, and I'm not guaranteeing we'll be able to do that this coming weekend, but we were last weekend, and our folks have, I think, done a really good job of being flexible and operating on the fly and trying to do their very best for our fans and everyone involved to put on these events.
Well, it was an amazing weekend last weekend, just as it was when Tennessee hosted Arkansas in week 9 for the stadium to be at 100% capacity. So many have wished just the opportunity to be on campus while the event takes place. Would you ever consider, or would you have time to put together like a parking lot party like in Staff Lot 9 across from Neyland Stadium, where you would have a big screen and the ability to have a bunch of people that just wanted to be on campus and have like a festival type atmosphere as an overflow from those that might not be able to get into Lindsey Nelson?
Yeah, we're exploring some things to see if it's possible. Going through this past year, the COVID year, other than maybe our sports medicine staff, I can't think of a more stressed and stretched staff than our event management people.
Yeah,
and these things obviously are unique opportunities, and it's all hands on deck. But we are looking, and I say that just to give them thanks for all that they do just to put on the Super Regional this weekend. And if we can find a way to do something for our fans on campus, we're going to. It's just about logistics and timing mm-hmm. and can we figure that out in a way that would be a good experience? And if we can, we'll do it. We're still exploring that.
I guess Tennessee Athletic Director Danny White. Danny, the SEC a few weeks ago gave $23 million in supplemental revenue to each school to mitigate the financial impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I wonder, from your perspective, how important was that for you to carry on with paying people, the salaries, facilities, et cetera?
It was critical. COVID hit a lot of different industries differently, but certainly in the sports world, in the sports industry, professional and college, those of us that rely on game day revenue just took a massive financial loss. There's no way to plan for that kind of loss. So I really appreciate our commissioner, Greg Sankey, and all those at the conference office that got creative. Long before I joined the SEC and came to Tennessee, they were working on a plan to help each campus get through this year. And it positions us to as a conference, but certainly at Tennessee, our focus has been there's going to be a lot of athletic departments that are struggling coming out of this. Mm-hmm. And I think those that can get back sprinting quicker are going to be advantaged in doing so. And for a place like us that, you know, we're trying to be in growth mode, we want to rebuild this Tennessee brand and get back to what we all know Tennessee athletics can be and is going to be a leader on the college athletics landscape nationally. I look at this as an opportunity. Let's come out of this from a financial perspective and come out of this pandemic sprinting and getting up and running at full speed a lot quicker than other places. And if we do that, I think we can gain some ground.
Does this mean that the SEC will have less in revenue sharing in future years?
For a short time, that'll be a reality of it. The money didn't come out of the air. It's coming out of future distribution, but there's still great growth opportunities. The future of the conference is really strong.
I know you were asked about the NCAA earlier today, and you said there's no timetable on figuring out when this might conclude. But I wonder, is the law firm that you hired, are they still investigating, or is that in the hands of the NCAA at this time? Do you know?
We're still working hand-in-hand, our staff, with the law firm and with NCAA staff. They've been involved from the beginning in our interviews. So the investigation is still going, and it's moving along, I think, as quick as it can. I'm not the most patient person. I'd love to have it done yesterday, but compared to other examples across the country, we're way ahead of schedule, and we intend to keep it that way.
Of course, Josh Heupel has a great opportunity and at the same time a lot of work to do, but I also think he's doing a lot of good work. How pleased are you with what you've seen, especially with how well he and his staff have been able to bring in some guys from the transfer portal that gives them more options going into this fall, and just what I think has been a wonderful player reaction from those that were already on campus as he and his staff took over to what looks to be just building everything in the right direction along with what looks to be a fantastic attitude in doing so?
Yeah, Josh is a great person, a great leader. He's doing a phenomenal job. I think he built an awesome staff. We had just a great place to recruit to. Obviously, he did in terms of his staff and the resources that we invested in that to make sure that we got quality people that are in college football for the right reasons. And it's been just an awesome experience and feeling for me to just watch our student athletes in football in the kind of the transformation they've gone through, even just the first couple of weeks after Josh was hired, and they kind of learned about a new tone and a new culture, and they're having a ball. They're having so much fun every day. I've never seen a group do so much on their own time. I'll walk out of my office at 7:30 at night, and there'll be 3, 4, 5, 6 football kids on the indoor field, throwing balls and running routes, and they're hungry. You can tell, and they're really excited. And the positivity in the program, I think, is great for building a foundation that we're going to need to have the level of success that we all want and to sustain it.
And it can always be a difficult decision to make a change, but you've brought in a new head coach to take over Tennessee women's golf. What do you think about the addition of Coach Cantu to the Tennessee athletics family?
She's going to be awesome. I think people those that don't know her are going to really enjoy getting to know her. I know a lot of our folks close to the athletics department remember her as a student athlete. Deanna was a member of our women's golf team and a really high level player, and went on to be an assistant at Baylor, and brought their program, was a big part of bringing them to national prominence. And for the last 7 years, she's been the head coach at Maryland. She was the Big Ten Coach of the Year this past year, took Maryland golf to levels that they had never seen before in just about every stat. I think actually every stat. She's a dynamic personality, aggressive thinker, really competitive. She's going to be great for our program, and a modern approach to interacting with student athletes and recruiting student athletes. I know when I introduced her to the team via Zoom, I guess it was yesterday, that their eyes lit up. They were excited, and she represents kind of exactly what they asked me for in a variety of ways. She's going to be great for us.
Danny, I got two more quick ones for you. The college football playoff. I saw a story yesterday where some college administrators favor going from 4 to 12 teams in a playoff. Where are you on that? Do you like 4? Do you prefer 12?
You know, I've been on record for the last several years of really having a strong opinion that we need to expand the playoff. And I know I've kind of switched sides coming to Tennessee from UCF in terms of in a lot of ways the conversation. But I still do strongly believe, and I'm still on the same boat, that the expansion of the playoff is going to be so good for the sport in so many ways. Having a regular season that's more relevant later into the season, having teams being able to still fight for, you know, getting hot at the right time like they do in other sports and finish strong and you know, win a national championship despite maybe having lost a game or two earlier in the year when they're still developing as a unit. So I can't wait to see it happen. I think it's going to be absolutely awesome for the sport, whether it's 8 or 12 or 16. There's a long conversation about that. And I'll let others kind of tackle that. I know our commissioner's in the middle of it, but I'm just happy to see it happening.
I got one more for you. We interviewed your dad a few months ago, and Kevin White said there is no way that Mike White, the basketball coach, could work for Danny White, the athletic director. Is he correct?
Yeah, he probably is. As anybody, I think that has had the success he's had as a coach. He's a pretty competitive guy, and if there's a more competitive AD out there, I'd like to meet him. So I think we'd butt heads a lot. I tell you what, I've really enjoyed getting to know Rick Barnes and working with Rick. Man, is he just an awesome person and a heck of a basketball coach. I've really enjoyed that, and I expected to. I'd heard great things, but I didn't know Rick prior to getting here. The Mike and Danny White combo, ever working together, is probably not a recipe for success. If our driveway battles from back in the day are any indication.
That's what your dad said. He said they typically ended up in a fight.
So. Oh, no question. There's a lot of bloodshed, a lot of competition.
Hey, Danny, thank you so much. Really do appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, and best of luck to you in the future.
No question, guys. Thanks for having me. Go Vols.
Thank you.
Danny White, Athletic Director, Tennessee.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Outstanding opportunity to catch up with Tennessee Director of Athletics, Danny White. And so if you happen to miss any of that, we'll have that available on 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Coming up, hour number 4 of the program. Look forward to bringing you some comments in regards to Tennessee baseball, as we heard from Evan Russell and Tennessee coach Tony Vitello today. But up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Picks at 6. So stay with us on 99.1 The Sports Animal.